Hello and welcome to Don't Pee on Your Leg and Other Scientific Misconceptions, where we talk about scientific misconceptions we all have, and we hope that you learn something new about the world. I'm here with my co-host, Camden. Merry Christmas, little mama, Hanslick Burton.
And joining me is my co-host, Margaret. Well, wouldn't you know it, Hanslick Burton.
Welcome to the show. Welcome, everybody. As you know, if you've been listening before, our first segment every week is where we share something that we are excited about. Camden.
Margaret, do you see that light on the ceiling?
I do.
I fixed that.
I know you did.
With some help from
a listener and a friend,
was able to fix a light that was blinking a lot.
Mm-hmm. Like a horror movie.
And yeah, it felt really cool to just shut off the power and like replace a whole light fixture. I felt like a real electrician. I didn't hurt myself. I was safe. Found a dead mouse. That's fine. Not worrying about it.
Mm-mm, no.
And now the light's working. So I feel accomplished.
We're really homeowners now.
Yep. I fixed the light. So listeners, if you need a light fixed, you reach out at don'tpeeonyourleg@gmail.com.
If you're in our area, we are willing to travel, but only a little bit and only if you wear a mask. Yeah. Well, thank you for doing that, Camden, because it's much brighter in here now.
Weird how that works.
Yep. Well, I am excited about a couple things, outdoor things. I got my Mason Bees from rentmasonbees.com, a Seattle-based or Washington-based organization that rents out Mason Bees. I'm sure I've told the podcast about them before, but it was really nice to just have them. It's nice to have them here in their little block on our house in Kansas. And it feels just like a little bit of the Northwest, a little bit of stability is here with us. So I'm really excited to see them kind of start to wake up and start to explore their surroundings. So we'll see. We'll see those bees coming around.
It's sure to be very exciting. Should we go on to our next segment?
Sure. I was just letting that sink in for the listeners, making sure they got that little pun. So we are going to go on to our next segment called What Is That Sound, Camden Theme Song?
Buzz, buzz, buzz. Is it a bee? It might not be at all.
Excellent. Where we keep with the spirit of the show.
I keep thinking you're going to cut me off before I have no. to think of a rhyme.
Meaning that one of us researches something the other one doesn't know about, but here Camden has found a sound that I don't know, and he's going to play it, and I'm going to have to guess what it is. And again, this sound is scientific in some way.
Margaret, are you ready to guess what it might be? That's a hint.
Oh, boy. Yes. Is it a hint?
No.
Okay. Wow. That is...
challenging to listen to.
That's challenging. It reminds me of a summer afternoon.
Okay.
Like cicadas, that constant buzzing that you hear, at least in this part of the country. I'm going to say it's bug related. Can I have another listen?
Okay.
May I?
I'll bug you with this.
Yeah, I'm going to go with a cicada. I'm sure that I've like pigeonholed myself with that guess, but that's what it sounds like to me.
Well, Margaret, you would be close.
Really?
I wasn't trying to throw you off too much. It is the Indies short-tailed cricket.
Oh, okay. I wasn't too far off. Tell me about them.
Oh, nothing interesting about them.
I'm sure that's not true.
Fun to play cricket. No, so these came from an article called The Sounds That Haunted U.S. Diplomats in Cuba, Lovelorn Cricket, scientists say.
Oh.
So this is an article in the New York Times. It was written by science writer Carl Zimmer. And so basically it came from this thought that in 2016, there were American diplomats who kept hearing this sound, and they thought that some other like foreign entity was using blast sounds or microwaves or something subversive, like some sort of supersonic weapon to induce headaches and nausea, which were being reported
sure.
by those diplomats. And then upon further investigation and discovery, it turns out that it was a cricket.
It was crickets.
And as you might have, everyone who just listened to that might have realized, like, yeah, I could see how someone might be like, oh my God, someone's trying to scramble my brain. Mm-hmm. It's certainly much more intense than maybe the normal little cricket chirp that you might be used to in your backyard.
Much longer.
And yeah, could have definitely been a very loud, disrupting thing, but not anything so subversive and malicious as that. Just a cricket loose in a diplomatic office.
That is amazing. What a great sound. What a great story behind that sound.
Yeah.
Thanks, Camden.
Margaret, your name, and your name, and then their name.
What, Camden, what are you doing?
I'm sharing our Patreon supporters. This is the part where we read off their names and tell them thanks.
Oh, okay. So how would someone become a Patreon supporter?
Easy. So you can support Don't Pee on Your Leg and Other Scientific Misconceptions and our other podcasts, Gotta Classify Them All, by supporting us on Patreon. How, you might ask? By going to patreon.com/don'tpeeonyourleg. If you'd be so kind and you're willing to, you can choose between one of three support levels, and the top two levels will earn you access to some of our bonus content.
What bonus content, you may wonder? Great question. Well, special episodes of Don't Pee on Your Leg and half of the episodes of Gotta Classify Them All are produced every other week, with public episodes being published once a month. So you'll get the odd-numbered episodes on the public feed on Apple, Spotify, Google, wherever you listen to the podcast. But to get the even-numbered episodes of Gotta Classify Them All, you'll want to become a fan of the show on Patreon to gain access to that bonus content from us.
So again, you can support us and gain access to all of our wonderful bonus content and, you know, just support your favorite two podcasters.
We appreciate it.
By going to patreon.com/don'tpeeonyourleg. Now back to your regular scheduled programming.
So let's head into the main segment of the show, which of course are the misconceptions. Every week, we each bring a new scientific misconception to share, explain, and discuss. And as a note, each co-host has researched a misconception on their own, and they bring it to the podcast. The other co-host doesn't know what they're going to be talking about. And this is just to make it feel like more of a discussion where listeners and the other co-host don't feel like they need to prepare and can just learn along with you all. So Camden, I pulled up this fun website called Wheel of Names to pick who goes first.
That's
I know.
Fun looking.
I know. So it says Camden and Margaret on it. As always, the person who it picks will go first. Does that sound fair?
Yep, that seems fair.
Okay.
Wow, it's really spinning.
Hold on. Here we go.
Oh, round and round she goes. Oh, keep going.
Nope. It's me. I promise I didn't wait the digital wheel. I'm so excited. I'm really excited about this misconception.
It's going to be about coffins.
No, it's not. It is related.
Ah, there it is.
It is.
There it is.
It kind of came to
ahead.
Me from. Okay.
Are all coffins square?
No.
Go ahead.
No coffins are square, I don't think. So I found this misconception while watching Caitlin Doughty's Ask a Mortician YouTube channel. So you're not far off. But specifically while watching her video called Visiting Hawaii's Tragic and Remote Leprosy Colony, I would highly recommend that video. Caitlin briefly mentioned in it that people think of limbs falling off with leprosy, and that isn't true. So I had this misconception until this morning.
Yeah, I've seen that in a lot of media. Cartoons and media where it's just like, yep, eventually that's just one of the side effects of leprosy.
Yeah, so I thought that was scientifically backed, but I'd never looked into it. So my sources are the aforementioned Ask a Mortician video, the World Health Organization, the CDC, and an article from Stanford called History of Leprosy. So, first, what is leprosy?
It is a disease.
Correct. Do you want me to tell you more about it?
I know that armadillos carry it, are more likely to carry it because their body temperature is naturally colder than most animals, and leprosy thrives in colder internal temperatures. That's all I got.
I didn't look into armadillos, so I cannot confirm or deny that.
I'm pretty sure that one's accurate.
Okay. We'll update you at the end of the episode if it's not accurate. Not that I think it's
very relevant to the misconception about whether armadillos had them or not.
No, that is not the misconception today. But thank you. I did not know that about colder body temperatures.
Don't lick an armadillo.
Not a good idea for a lot of reasons. Number one, because they won't like it. So leprosy, also called Hansen's disease, is a disease caused by Mycobacterium leprae, which is a kind of bacteria. And it's been renamed Hansen's disease, at least according to a couple of sources that I looked at. And that is after Hansen, H-A-N-S-E-N, the scientist who discovered the disease-causing bacteria in 1873. So I'm going to be referring to leprosy as Hansen's disease.
Oh.
Because of stigmas we'll get into later.
Gotcha. So leprosy is an outdated term.
At least according to some. There are many different sources, of course, because this is an international phenomenon and an international disease. So different people have different approaches, but I'm going to just be calling it Hansen's disease.
Okay.
For my purposes. So, as you may know, it's been around for thousands and thousands of years. Researchers found a description of what they believe is Hansen's disease on a document written on papyrus in Egypt from around 1550 BC. So
pretty old.
Way, way back. Those bacteria I was talking about, the Mycobacteria leprae, they specifically target the nerves of a person's body, including the nerves of the face, including the nose and eyes, the feet, and the hands. And those bacteria create numbness in those areas.
Okay.
In addition to numbness and, of course, loss of sensation in certain parts of the body, the effects of this disease can show up as skin discoloration, curling of the fingers, skin peeling, weak feelings in the eyelids, feet, or hands, swelling in the face or earlobes, and other similar symptoms. I also learned that women are less likely to be affected by Hansen's disease than men are, but scientists don't know why.
Interesting.
They're not sure. And one scary symptom that I'll get into, I mean, they're all scary, but one particularly scary symptom and one really serious symptom is that because of that numbness, you might not notice when you get hurt because you can't feel your limbs,
Oof. Which
is very scary. But we'll get more into that in a second. But how do you think it's spread, Camden?
Well, classically, which I realize I'm basing off of the things already that gave me this misconception, mm-hmm. I thought it was like you shouldn't touch somebody who has the disease. So it must be spread through like the skin.
Nope.
Yeah. Nope. I knew as I was saying it that the media had not supported me here.
No. But I appreciate your vulnerability. I really do. Hansen's disease is actually spread through droplets from the mouth or the nose of a person with the disease to the skin and or respiratory tract of someone else. So it does impact your skin, but you wouldn't get it from like skin to skin contact.
Which is just interesting because like all the popular media is like, don't touch that person. Mm-hmm. They have leprosy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And so getting back to that main misconception, do limbs fall off of a person due to leprosy or Hansen's disease? No. What can in fact happen, though, is that people with Hansen's disease, again, often don't feel anything, including pain in some of their limbs. And so they can injure themselves in different ways, which means that sometimes those injuries get infected and tissue can be lost. So it's possible that you might have to have part of your limb amputated, but that would be due to infection
because not feeling that it was infected.
Exactly. Gotcha. Exactly. And again, that doesn't always happen, but that might be where this misconception comes from, possibly. Now, as you can tell, it's a very serious disease, but there is some good news. So there are cures for Hansen's disease.
I did not know that.
Really? Yeah, I didn't either. There are effective medicines that work to treat and cure this disease that are too many people readily available. They treat Hansen's disease with multi-drug therapy or MDT. And that means that doctors treat people with Hansen's disease using a combination of drugs that treatment usually takes between 6 to 12 months, and then you're good to go. You're cured.
Really?
Yeah.
Because I always hear about like colonies of people and like how they have to be like sort of isolated. And
we'll get into that.
I assume that was like a permanent thing.
We'll get into that.
Okay.
We'll get into that.
I have a bad feeling.
No, you're okay. I mean, you are voicing what most people think about Hansen's disease, leprosy, and the how you treat it. So we'll get there. But yeah, it's amazing. You generally won't relapse or get Hansen's disease again if you have taken the full treatment.
Okay.
Always take the full treatment of whatever you're prescribed.
Sure.
Really important. Just finish it off, even if you're feeling good, whatever you have. Most people, again, in the good news category, they're fairly resistant to Hansen's disease, meaning that very few people develop observable symptoms, even if they've been exposed to the disease for a long time. And I learned, according to the World Health Organization, that 95% of people are naturally immune to Hansen's disease.
What?
That's high. Yeah.
What?
95%.
Holy cow.
I know.
I assumed anyone could get it.
I know. Well, and it's not a very infectious disease also because the bacteria really don't multiply very quickly. They take a long time. So
wild.
It's part of what makes it less communicable. And almost all countries on the planet have reported that Hansen's disease is no longer a countrywide public health concern. However, that doesn't mean it doesn't happen, because it does happen. It's just much less common. And now we're going to kind of get into the stigma of leprosy, Hansen's disease. The bad news is that people with the disease have been, continue to be stigmatized due to incorrect beliefs about what that disease entails. So unlike what we may have heard or been told about, you know, colonies or sanatoriums, people with Hansen's disease don't need to be confined to any special place or island in the case of the Hawaiian leprosy colony that I mentioned. They can be treated in general hospitals just like any other patient with any other disease. And
they don't pose much of a threat, since 95% of people are immune to it.
Right. Which is not the case with many other diseases that are treated in hospitals.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So clearly it still needs to be paid attention to. And that's for a couple reasons. Many people hold harmful misconceptions and stigmas about this disease and people who have the disease, which leads to discrimination, ostracism from their communities. And unfortunately, as you may be able to tell, this disease really usually affects people without resources or who have limited access to quality health care. And the stigma can impact that too, because if you think you might have Hansen's disease and you live in a community that stigmatizes it, you're probably not going to want to go to the doctor and have that confirmed. Does that make sense?
I mean, I would have bet a lot of doctors, if they heard a patient had, you know, leprosy, Hansen's disease, would probably react the way most people would.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I imagine it's not covered often in medical school anymore.
No, no. So misconceptions like the one I had add to the stigma of those with the disease. There are false ideas that it's easy to get, there isn't a cure. And then some communities, according to World Health Organization, view those with Hansen's disease as being cursed, which is a whole nother level of stigma. And I'm sure you can think of examples throughout history when people with leprosy or Hansen's disease have been treated inhumanely, exiled from their communities because of misconceptions about it and its symptoms, contagiousness, and treatment. So going back to the video I watched this morning, people living in the leprosy or Hansen's disease colony in Hawaii were separated from their families, and any children that those people had while they were in the colony were taken away from them based on the false misconception, or based on the false idea that it was hereditary, which it is not.
Wow.
Yeah. And then in Europe in the Middle Ages, people with Hansen's disease were forced to identify themselves through their clothing, and they had to ring bells to let others know that they were nearby. So that ostracism, that negative stereotyping, that inhumane treatment has been happening for thousands of years.
For a disease, again, that was probably not going to infect someone, even if you did
exactly
come in contact with them. Meanwhile, the bubonic plague and all of those things, like, they weren't having people like ring bells, or you think about even pandemics today, we're not having people ring bells when they like get COVID.
And
like,
that's this, much more communicable. Yeah, exactly. Outrageous. Exactly. So here is what the World Health Organization wants you to know about Hansen's disease. I'm going to quote from their website. Hansen's disease is caused by a germ. It's not hereditary nor a curse. It can be easily diagnosed from clinical features alone by a trained health worker. A combination of drugs called MDT kills germs and stops the spread of the disease after the first dose. Patients on MDT do not spread Hansen's disease. MDT is available free of charge at all health facilities, and Hansen's disease can be completely cured. Early and regular treatment prevents deformities. Patients who complete treatment are totally cured, even if they have residual skin patches. And patients can lead completely normal lives during and after their treatment. So to sum it up, this misconception illustrates the importance of correcting misconceptions. Uninformed and false ideas can have real negative effects on people's lives, sometimes over hundreds of years.
Yeah.
We need to inform ourselves of the facts, especially when it comes to unexamined stigmas that we might be carrying. So World Leprosy Day takes place on the last Sunday of January every year. We just missed it. Just kidding. It's March. And its founder, Raul Foyero, hoped that this day would serve as a reminder to the public that people still suffer from this disease because of barriers to medical care and because of the unnecessary shame they may feel about having it that's imposed by their communities and people all over the world. However, good news again. There is an International Federation of Anti-Leprosy Associations, and if you have an extra dollar or two, you can visit tinyurl.com/Hansen's orgs. Remember that Hansen is spelled with an A and an E. And you can find an organization that resonates with you and maybe toss a couple bucks their way because they're doing really good work. Unfortunately, it's not completely eradicated, and being able to continue to eradicate it or work towards that goal is a really, really worthy cause.
And educate people about it as well.
And educate people. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So there you have it, Camden. I know that was a bit of a heavy one, but I thought it was important.
Yeah, there are so many misconceptions within that that I obviously have been fed and
me too
hadn't thought much about and, you know, have been fortunate to not have to think about. But that was really good, Margaret. Thank you.
All right.
Spin the wheel. Well, let's hope it lands on me.
You want to make just one color on this wheel?
No, I'll just go.
Okay.
All right. Margaret.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no.
If I told you you ate something that was radioactive, what would you think?
Probably true.
Okay. How would you potentially feel, Margaret, common person?
Oh.
Who, if I told you you ate something radioactive or you were standing next to something radioactive?
Panicked, fear-stricken, terrified. Is that better?
Yeah, thanks. Yeah. Good. Margaret, is everything that's radioactive dangerous?
Yes, I'm terrified.
Let's find out, silly person. Just kidding. That's a misconception. We all have them. So we're going to tackle the misconception. Is everything that's radioactive dangerous?
That's a really good one. That's a really good one.
So to cite some sources, going to go, you know, to the big hitters, Wikipedia, WHO is also going to show up,
hey.
World Health Organization, citable by Nature Education, sciencescene.com, and the number one source of all sources, xkcd.com. particularly the What If blog,
yes.
Where some of this inspiration came out of, which was, what if you dove in a radioactive pool?
Mm.
What would happen to you?
Okay.
So let's start with, what is radiation? Radiation is simply energy traveling as a wave or a particle through the universe.
Hmm.
That's it.
That's lovely.
Radiation is energy traveling as a wave or a particle.
Okay.
That's it.
Pretty simple. Pretty straightforward.
So sound is energy. It travels as a wave.
Mm-hmm.
We are very familiar with that. There's gravitational energy, which we're not going to get into. Things like space-time, if you're familiar with that. The way our planets and stars move, through the universe is affected by gravitational energy.
Mm-hmm.
There is also particle radiation. So this comes from very fast moving particles, which we're going to talk more about, and electromagnetic energy. So those are all common types of radiation, electromagnetic radiation, particle radiation, and even sound is radiation because it's just energy traveling as a wave.
All right.
How do we measure that energy? Energy is measured in joules, which is affected by the speed of light.
Can you spell that, please?
Oh, great. Joules, J-O-U-L-E-S. Mm. It's after Jewel the person.
Not Jewel the singer.
Not Jewel the singer, okay. Although if she is listening, hi.
Hey.
And the higher energy comes from shorter wavelengths, which we'll talk about here. So high energy comes from shorter wavelength radiation. So the more energy a wave of radiation has, the more potential it has to cause harm, which makes kind of sense.
Mm-hmm.
If you hit something that's very low energy, like you're hit by a car that's in neutral, that's sort of backing up, you're probably okay. You move out of the way.
But be careful out there.
Hit by a car moving at 80 miles an hour, that's pretty fast.
That's
a lot of energy there. Really get out of the way.
Okay.
Well, you got hit, but you know. So Margaret, what are types of radiation you've heard of?
UV radiation?
Ultraviolet radiation. Yes, that is a type.
I've heard of electromagnetic radiation.
Yep. So electromagnetic radiation is sort of this big house of radiation that mm-hmm. is obviously affected by electricity and magnetism.
Mm-hmm.
So ultraviolet radiation is a type of electromagnetic wave.
I feel like you're looking at... Oh,
Do you want other? I didn't know. I always thought you'd just throw out some common things.
Gamma.
Gamma rays. They are the highest form of electromagnetic radiation, highest energetic form.
Okay.
So those travel through space pretty common, which is why spacesuits that our astronauts wear have to be particularly insulated against gamma rays. They are very harmful because they're very high energy.
I once read a paper on gamma rays, the effect of gamma rays on Man on the Moon marigolds.
Oh.
Just kidding. It's a play.
Oh. Oh, right. Dang it. Some others, radio waves.
Yes.
Our radios work off. Like if you're listening in your car to radio, that is a form of electromagnetic wave.
So electromagnetic waves or radiation are really a big umbrella.
Yes.
Or umbrella, as most people say, yes. I am learning, that encompasses a lot of different kinds.
Yeah. Radio waves. Do you think those are high or low energy?
Low.
We are bombarded with them all the time. It mm-hmm. is happening right now. Their wavelength is so low that we need special receivers, like in our cars, mm-hmm. to pick them up. Microwaves are another one.
Mm-hmm.
Those are traveling through the world all the time. Not thinking about a microwave oven, which is obviously very concentrated.
Right.
Infrared radiation, also traveling through the world. Everyone listening right now is being bombarded by all of these right now.
Right now?
Right now.
Oh, gosh. I gotta go.
In fact, you're being bombarded by another one that is even higher energy than radio waves, microwaves, or infrared radiation. Light. What you think of as visible light is a form of electromagnetic radiation.
Mm-hmm.
And it has higher energy than those. So if you can see colors, you are seeing a moderately high energy form of radiation, but not damaging.
Right.
You mentioned ultraviolet radiation. That can be damaging. And then we get even higher energy forms of X-rays, which definitely can be damaging. And then the most energetic form, gamma rays. Why are these damaging? Why can they be dangerous? There's something called an ionizing form of radiation and a non-ionizing.
Mm.
And so an ion, for those of you who might not remember high school or, you know, middle school chemistry.
And that is okay.
It's totally okay. An ion is an atom that has lost or gained an electron.
Mm-hmm.
Atoms don't really like to do that. They have the number of electrons they have. So when they lose or add an electron, it involves some amount of energy.
Mm-hmm.
If a form of radiation is ionizing, it means it has enough energy to do something to their electrons, make them lose it or gain it. So ionizing radiation has a lot more energy, is typically more dangerous. X-rays and gamma radiation are ionizing, as are particle radiation, Mm-hmm. So we're going to talk about ionizing radiation because that's the dangerous kind because it has lots of energy. So I already talked to you about X-rays and gamma rays like in space. But the one that people, I think of when they think of something that is radioactive is actually particle radiation.
Yes.
So particle radiation is not electromagnetic radiation. That is in the form of a wave. Another form of radiation is a particle. Particles are different than waves. I won't get into the details there because there's a lot of physics involved.
Right.
But when an atom is very unstable, it has something going on in it that makes it really want to get rid of some of its particles, we call it radioactive.
Mm-hmm.
So generally, the more things it has, the bigger and bigger an atom gets, the more likely it is to be potentially radioactive, which is why, what is a radioactive atom you think of, Margaret? That goes in like power plants, the ones that people
nuclear.
Uh-huh.
Radiation.
Uranium was the one I was thinking of. Sorry, I didn't mean to set you up.
Yeah, I felt very
sorry
on the spot there.
So uranium.
Wait, can we take it again?
Go ahead. Margaret, what's a common atom?
Uranium.
Nice. You even let me finish. So if you've heard of like uranium or plutonium, those are quote unquote big, like they have a lot of protons and neutrons in them. That causes them to be a little generally more unstable. Mm. They give off a lot of particles, which is what makes them radioactive. If particles just fly off of them, they are radioactive.
Mm-hmm.
Why these are dangerous, like I said, those particles, when they fly off, have a ton of energy in them to just shoot off from an atom because atoms generally hold on to their particles very tightly.
Mm-hmm.
If those particles were to hit you, that could be a problem. They can cause things like burn. So there's things as being of radiation burns.
Oh, yeah.
They can even be harmful to breathe in, which is why inhaling radiation can even be damaging, even not just being like hit with it.
You're reminding me of a story that I was watching this mini documentary about it on YouTube, but somebody stole, this is, the details are fuzzy, but somebody stole a piece of a nuclear power plant, didn't know what it was, and took it home and like let their family play with.
Is this real?
Yeah.
My goodness.
And like touched it and like put it in their food because they didn't know what it was, and it was like fun and glowing.
All
and
die.
It was awful. Yeah, it was awful.
Yeah, I will get into why I just assumed that they all died.
Yeah.
That was a radioactive substance. Obviously, there are very radioactive things that are very dangerous. But like we've already sort of busted here, not everything that is radioactive is particularly dangerous. A, because there's a lot of form of radiation, like sound and ultraviolet light that we see all the time. But when we think about particle radiation, even that isn't necessarily dangerous, quote unquote.
Mm.
So radiation is measured in curies, which are the amount of radiation.
Is that C-U-R-I-E?
Yeah, like Marie Curie, mm-hmm. who won the Nobel Peace Prize for this and also died due to the amount of radiation she was exposed to.
Is it just a Nobel Prize?
Nobel Prize, Peace Prize. Yeah, well, she was peaceful, I think.
Probably.
And the sievert, which is the amount of radiation you absorb. So we're going to talk about sieverts because that relates to what a human absorbs. Obviously, the amount of radiation given off is not necessarily what someone might absorb.
I just remembered also radium girls. We've talked about that before.
Yes.
The women who worked in the factory to paint watch faces with
radium.
Yeah, radium. With radium. And they would put it on their faces. And it was not good.
Yeah.
Don't do that. And they didn't know. And they...
Right. I think the
long
book...
Story,
there's
but it's
a book,
great book
called Radium Girls.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Exactly.
That talks about that story. Yeah. Licking radioactive substances.
Oh,
not a good idea.
No.
Generally, because I'll talk about, again, everything that is radioactive, not necessarily bad for you. Mm-hmm. So, sieverts. To give you a rule of thumb, one sievert, a dosage of one sievert, because this is a unit.
Okay.
Just like a gallon or whatever. One sievert is going to probably hurt you in some way. You're going to feel the effects. While 8 sieverts is the highest dosage ever known that it did kill somebody. And that before that, there have been cases of people living under 8 sieverts. Although one is already going to hurt you. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that's the amount of radiation we're talking about. So if you live near a nuclear power plant, mm-hmm. you have been exposed to 1/10,000,000th of a sievert.
Okay.
You are okay.
Yeah.
Often you'll hear in the news, people are complain about living near a nuclear power plant. Now, obviously, if something goes wrong there, that's something different. Mm-hmm. But just go ahead.
No, go ahead. I was just going to say, a lot of the times they're in neighborhoods with people of color, and they're kind of put in places that,
yeah, you
know, there's protest in other in
yes,
other the neighborhoods.
NIMBY, not in my backyard, is definitely a very white-centered approach to, I want these things.
But not near me.
I don't want them near me. Mm-hmm. We also see it in in a lot of poor places, places where there are more people of color, especially when you think of like windmills. Mm-hmm. Wind energy is an example of something that a lot of people are very, is great.
Yeah.
And a lot of people have strong feelings about. And some
but
who
aren't
don't
willing to, yes.
aren't don't want a windmill in your backyard.
Right.
It's something that is, you know, a good thing that for science and policy to work on.
Mm-hmm. And I'm just pointing out that if something were to happen, it would impact historically marginalized communities.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Sorry.
Yep. Nope. I was going to get to some of that.
Sorry.
So
sorry.
Nope.
I'm really sorry.
Yeah. That's fine. I'm going to mute Margaret's microphone. Okay, so living near it, 1/10,000,000th of a sievert. Something else that gives you 1/10,000,000th of a sievert that has nothing to do with how close you live to a nuclear power plant. Margaret.
A single kernel of popcorn.
Wow, kind of close.
Really?
A banana.
Oh, okay.
Bananas have a lot of what in them? People are always like, oh.
Potassium.
Potassium.
Mm-hmm.
There are few, very few radioactive forms of potassium, but they do exist out all over the universe.
Mm-hmm.
Bananas, potatoes, kidney beans, sunflowers, nuts all have potassium.
I have to stop eating whole sunflowers.
They are radioactive. Mm-hmm. They have radioactive potassium in them. You are fine.
So I can keep eating whole sunflowers.
Yeah, you can keep eating bananas. And in fact, you don't even need to eat them. You can be near it. So this is a great example of just because something is radioactive does not mean it is going to necessarily be harmful.
Exactly.
Because the next thing, x-rays. People get x-rays all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You are exposed to 1/1,000,000th of a sievert. Again, one will be harmful. Eight will definitely kill you. 1/1,000,000th of a sievert comes from an x-ray on average.
Wow. And that's, I assume, with the leaded
apron, right. I mean,
the weighted blanket.
Right. I mean, except for the part where they are actually measuring.
Right.
So again, 1/1,000,000th, you would have to
very
be exposed
tiny.
To 1,000,000 x-rays rapid fire to feel
one
sick
mm-hmm.
from it.
Mm-hmm.
The average background radiation for a person in, I think the United States is 10 microsieverts, again, 1/1,000,000th.
Mm-hmm.
So on average, people are exposed to roughly 10, general x-rays of radiation a year.
Okay. That's a really good way to put it in perspective. Gotcha.
So you're fine. Like a banana is 1/10,000,000th. You are not raising your risk any more or less by eating a banana.
Mm-hmm.
To put that in perspective, a person who was at Three Mile Island, so right. like a resident,
mm-hmm.
was exposed all at once to 80 microsieverts. Again, so 1/1,000,000th of a sievert.
Oh.
Which is not a ton for a resident of that area. We'll talk about someone who might have been at the site. A CAT scan mm-hmm. would be 2 millisieverts, so 2/1,000,000th. This of a sievert, again, more than those other things. I'm going in ascending order if you haven't noticed. Standing at Chernobyl today
mm-hmm.
for about an hour would be 6/1,000,000th of a sievert. 6/1,000,000th of a sievert
mm-hmm.
by staying at Chernobyl.
I'm still not gonna go.
Yeah, but also you're probably gonna be okay. A worker at the Fukushima meltdown was exposed on average to 40/1,000,000th of a sievert. So even being at Fukushima during the meltdown, on average, I'm not, again, I'll get into that, was not exposed to something that was particularly harmful. Mm-hmm. The mm-hmm. EPA limit for power plant workers is 50 millisieverts. So okay. about what one person at Fukushima was exposed to all at once.
Okay.
Radiation poisoning happens at around 400 millisieverts. It is particularly severe and could be lethal at 2 sieverts or 2,000 millisieverts.
So you have a wide margin there.
Yes. Yeah, so even the EPA limit is 1/8 of what is technically radiation poisoning. And that's for a whole year. Remember, we're talking all at once. You won't feel sick if you've been exposed to one throughout a year while that is high. We're talking like all at once if you were exposed to 1 sievert. A jawbone at Hiroshima was measured to have absorbed 10. Now, you might be 10 wow. sieverts. 8, I said, was the highest.
Yeah.
So, yep. And then Chernobyl at the reactor site during the meltdown was 50.
Wow.
So obviously radioactivity is, there's a spectrum of it as well.
Right.
There are differing levels of it. Lots of radiation can be damaging. But without even just worrying about radioactivity, don't worry if someone says a banana is radioactive, you're okay. They are technically fine. Correct, but you're fine. But there are other forms of radiation that people don't think about that are actually really, really dangerous. Like Margaret said at the very beginning, ultraviolet radiation. Being exposed to too much ultraviolet radiation without sunscreen has shown to be linked to skin cancer and can mm-hmm. alter your DNA permanently.
My gosh.
Is dangerous. Mm-hmm. You should protect yourself. And as Margaret mentioned earlier, there are tons of studies that have shown that the impact of race and gender on radiation exposure mm-hmm. is obviously very different because, you know, historically marginalized communities are generally not considered as the way we would consider a white community when we think about how do we take care of our nuclear waste, mm-hmm. which is something that is super important to consider.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, all things that are radioactive are not necessarily dangerous.
Thank you, Camden. Yeah, that is very true. I need to go buy some sunscreen for the summer. But yeah, that's very, very true. I'm still not going to eat a banana, not because I'm scared of radiation, but because I don't like bananas.
Well, that's your prerogative, I guess.
All right. So before we end each episode, we are going to have a short segment about something that we've consumed recently, read, listened to, watched, something like that. I'm going to go first since I went first on the misconceptions. I'm in charge today. I'm hosting. And I am consuming, and I can't stop consuming, the song Leave the Door Open by Anderson .Paak and Bruno Mars. It is so catchy and so good. Oh my gosh. I have it in my head right now. I'm going to listen to it as soon as we stop recording.
And you listened to it before we recorded.
Like 3 times. I can't stop listening to it. I love it so much. So if you haven't heard it, Leave the Door Open by Anderson .Paak and Bruno Mars. Amazing song. It's such just like ear candy. I love it so much.
And happy March Mammal Madness, everybody.
Oh, what did you whisper just there?
March Mammal Madness. So you might be a college basketball fan, or you might be like Margaret and I and be a fan of March Mammal Madness. March Mammal Madness originated in 2013 from Dr. Katie Hindy's blog, where she had an article called Mammals Suck Milk. And this has fledged into this full-on, really fun, educational tournament where 64 mammals, some of which we all know and some of which we know nothing about,
right.
are pitted against each other, and scientific literature is used to discuss the probability of whether if these two species were to meet in a quote-unquote battle environment. Not a basketball game. What might happen to them? And so it thinks about their armor, their body mass, their evolution. It's really interesting, and it's based Arizona State University runs it now, and it's in a lot of biology classrooms around the country. We are in the middle of it right now, so you missed a chance to fill out your bracket, but you still can fill out a bracket for the Elite Eight or the Final Four. It's really fun. Margaret, you can see on my screen.
Yeah, what's the website for that?
Well, it comes out on Twitter, but you can find it. If you just type in March Mammal Madness, you'll find it.
Okay.
If you just Google that. But you'll see on Twitter, they'll release some matchups, and they show pictures of them and their evolution.
I love it.
But they talk about, you know, real science literature. So you learn about these animals you've potentially never heard of before.
Mm-hmm.
They talk about where they live and their habitats. And then when you get to the Elite Eight or the Final Four, they start putting them not in their natural habitat, but they start randomizing and saying, what if they meet in the desert? And so it's really fun. And you learn a lot of biology at the same time. And they're done by some pretty fun people. So they make it fun as well.
Right.
March Mammal Madness.
I love that. Because that's kind of how I fill out my bracket every year anyway. Like thinking about what the mascots of these two college teams, who would win in real life.
You've done pretty well doing that before.
I haven't. I mean, like, I've done just as well as someone who knows about their game stats and stuff. So
yep.
I feel pretty good. I have. It's all random. Love a sport. So if you are needing something to consume this week and you're like, oh, I've watched all my shows, I've listened to all my podcasts, now that I've finished up listening to this one, I want to read a good book. I want to find a good book. Well, you can support us now through Bookshop. You can go to bookshop.org/shop/don't-pee-on-your-leg. Bookshop is this great site where we have recommended books that we have talked about on our podcast. And if you choose to buy a book from our Bookshop page, not only will they direct you to an independent bookstore, because we don't want to give Jeff Bezos any more of that money, but it'll also help support us. We get a little percentage of that sale as well. So if you're wondering about books we've talked about, you can go to bookshop.org/shop/don't-pee-on-your-leg.
And as a reminder, 2 weeks ago, we debuted our new show, Gotta Classify Them All, a Pokemon-centered show where your favorite hosts broke down Pokemon and the science behind them. You can learn more about the natural world and have some fun talking Pokemon on Gotta Classify Them All. Next week, you'll hear episode 3 about Venusaur. And if you're wondering what happened to episode 2, well, remember, that's exclusively for our Patreon subscribers. So support us by going to patreon.com/don't-pee-on-your-leg.
And thank you so much for listening today. If you liked this episode or any others, please rate us and leave us a quick review wherever you're listening. Those reviews help new listeners decide if they want to give us a try. So thanks for leaving those reviews.
You can find more content from us on our social media pages at Instagram at Don't Pee on Your Leg.
Twitter at Don't Pee on Your Leg, just the letter P.
And Facebook at facebook.com/don't-pee-on-your-leg.
Don't Pee on Your Leg and Other Scientific Misconceptions is a podcast produced by Two Birds, One Scone. Articles, blog posts, and more about what you can do every day to conserve our environment can be found at twobirdsonescone.org.
Our original theme music is by Camillo.
And as always, if you have scientific misconceptions that you'd like explained or you want to provide feedback to us, we welcome your emails at don'tpeeonyourleg@gmail.com.
Have a great week. Oh my gosh. What's a Berlin boar? Man, March Mammal Madness. A lot of mammals out there. It's just mammals. Isn't that wild? What's a Nimravid?